Welcome back to State of the Bay. I'm Grace Wan. For local author Bonnie Soy, muscle is more than just biology. It's personal. Her father was a man who valued strength and movement, and when she was growing up, he would take her on late-night runs and playfully urge her to flex her arms and make me a muscle. So it's no surprise that in her latest book, On Muscle, The Stuff That Moves Us and Why It Matters, Soy explores the profound role muscle plays in our lives, not just as a physical force, but as cultural and personal ones. Blending science, history, and her own experiences, Soy examines how muscles shape our identity and understanding of strength, beauty, and ourselves. And she is back here on State of the Bay. Welcome, Bonnie Soy.
Thanks, Grace. I'm so glad to be back with you.
Well, this book is so much more than just about muscles. I mean, on their face, muscles seem to be about being strong and being healthy, but you posit that muscles stand for so much more.
You know, one of the things I noticed right away when I was researching this book and thinking about it was how much muscle insinuates itself into our lexicon. I mean, think about all the ways we talk about strength and muscling through things. That stands for grit or being flexible or down at the mouth. All of these, they're physical states of being that have to do with our muscles. Even when we're telling ourselves to not be people of action, we're telling ourselves to relax. and that's a muscular state of being too. And so I think the metaphor of it for just our existential states as people is so wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, as you point out, muscle is movement and memory.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things that I did learn through the process of working on this book was that muscle itself has its own kind of memory. So, you know, when we talk about muscle memory, typically we're talking not about a memory that lives in muscle cells or muscle tissue. We're talking about the pattern of motor neuron memory, you know, around certain movements that control our muscles. But the latest science, very new, shows that the cells themselves have a prior a memory of past exercise. And so what that really means for us is good news, which is that, you know, even if you haven't been active for some time, your muscles remember how to do it. They can bounce back. And I think that's really heartening.
Well, I'm hoping that my muscles remember way back decades ago when I was in junior high and I did the chin-ups for the presidential medal fitness test or whatever.
Oh my gosh, I will never forget that. Never, ever.
It looks so easy, but they are so hard. Why are they
They're so hard. Well, you are basically trying to heave up your entire body weight above your head using just your spindly arms. And I have such a great memory of trying to do it in my own house because my dad always had a chin-up bar, a pull-up bar just in the doorway in his downstairs studio. And he would walk under it and do a bunch of flips or some chin-ups. And my brother and I would also try to do it. But we were just, I can put myself right back there now. Like we're trying to kick with our legs to get up.
Yes.
And somehow it seemed like it should be able to help us swim up there, but it never really quite. But, you know, the moment in which you actually do achieve getting your head above the bar is so amazing. And it's these like daily incremental gains to get stronger and stronger until you finally get there. And then it's just game changing. It's life changing.
Yeah. There's a section about strength, and the book highlights some incredible feats of strength and endurance. And I'd love to talk about some of those, like people who run 50 miles through the Nevada desert or pick up these famously heavy, I'm going to not say this right, I think Scottish, is it a Dinny Stone?
Dinny Stones, yes.
The Scottish what are they? And how? What are they and why should we care about them?
Well, I think everyone can understand the idea of lifting a big rock to show manhood,
I guess.
I mean, it's very prehistoric, very paleo man, right? And in many cultures around the world, lifting a heavy object was a measure of strength and manhood over the centuries. And demonstrations of strength publicly were a way throughout human history to show what I call leadership skills, I guess you would call it now. But it was a way to demonstrate power, right? And so physical strength was something that was very necessary for much of human history and endurance and all of that. And, you know, in Iceland, for example, lifting a heavy thing was something that fishermen would do to earn a larger share of the catch, like going out to sea. And so this was so interesting to me to unearth these stories in different cultures, everywhere from Scotland to Japan to India. And in Scotland, lifting heavy rocks was something that was done for many, many centuries, and still today is a tradition. And in the 1970s, Jan Todd, who was a pioneer power lifter, she was the first woman to lift the Dinny stones, which were a very special set of stones of strength. And the crazy thing is that she would remain the only woman to do so for like another 40 years. So
Wow.
she was really ahead of her time and was such a trailblazer for so many of these strong women to come. And she became not only a very respected sports historian, but she continues to do things like direct the Strong People Games at the Arnold Sports Festival every year in Columbus. And so she was one of my favorite stories to tell for sure.
Well, there's a fascination we have with superhuman strength. And I mean, you start out one of the chapters about, the woman whose child is underneath the car, and she's not a particularly strong person, but she manages to lift that car up. And we just have a fascination with brute strength as a culture.
We do. And I think we all understand when we see it. And despite living these increasingly virtual lives, when we see someone demonstrate strength in person, in front of us, it is something awesome. It is something that we are instinctively riveted by, whether it's bending a bottle cap or lifting a big rock or throwing something a great distance or dragging a tractor. We love watching these strongman games. And I think there's just something there that's very atavistic, right? Like lifting a heavy thing is really like, oh, so that's demonstrating something that we recognize as power. And it's not just physical strength, right? So we were joking about lifting a heavy rock being a demonstration of leadership skills, but today, physical strength and ability and athleticism is still a proxy for a certain kind of person, a character trait of like perseverance and grit, and you don't give up and all of that. And so our character somehow is still very much tied to our physical abilities.
Well, as we age, there are always some muscle parts that take the brunt. And I love that you devoted an entire chapter to shoulders because I mean, the idea metaphorically of shouldering a burden, but I think in our, as we were talking about this desk jockey world that we live in, everyone's shoulders are either,
Hunched over.
hunched over.
Look
I
at us.
mean,
Look at how we're sitting right
I'm
now.
becoming the office golem, I'm pretty sure. So tell me a little bit about why they are so important to us.
I mean, I have a bias for a really beautiful set of shoulders because I'm a swimmer and I'm keyed into that. But I think shoulders, again, like kind of going back to the whole metaphor of what muscle is and how certain muscles hold meaning for us, right? So in our society and culture, it's like shouldering a burden or squaring your shoulders means that you're preparing to do something hard. And even when your shoulders are hunched, or this posture indicates strength or weakness. And even like wearing a power suit with big shoulders, I mean, think about how in the 80s, like women were wear these crazy suits to telegraph power in the office, right? And I think there's a lot to unpack about that. And we don't have enough time to talk about all of those things, but I do make an attempt to do that in the book because I find it so fascinating to pick those threads of meaning apart and you trace them. And once you start noticing them, you can't unsee it, how we really attribute so much more to muscle than the thing and the stuff itself.
Well, I recently read a New York Times article that said it's all my glutes, that if I would just fix my glutes, I think I'd live a better and happier life.
Yeah, if you think about how our glutes now are used more for sitting than for actually running on the prairie or the savannah, that is really sad. We gotta wake them up. We gotta wake them up.
I mean, you paint the glute as one of the muscles that you sketch. I mean, you're a beautiful artist,
Thank you.
triple threat here, athlete, writer, and artist. And I was curious, why was that one of the muscles that you did pick to depict?
I drew a whole bunch of muscles over the course of the last several years, just kind of because I kind of wanted to trace bodily what I was talking about. And again, because my dad was a professional artist when I was growing up, and physically following that visual echo, I guess, because everything is movement, including art. And Paul Klee had this great quote that I put in the book about, like, art is actually an exercise in movement, because when you draw something like a dance, you're capturing a dancer who's moving, and your hand, your eyes following this dancer, and your hand is roving around trying to capture it. And then you pin it to the page, but then the viewer then sees it. They're also appreciating it with a roving eye, you know? And I just love how you think about visual art as static, but it's not. It is all about movement. Even the appreciating of the finished product is. And there's something very meaningful about tracing or even handwriting, you know, words. When we're listening to a lecture, it's different when we're writing things down with our hands than typing, because we are processing from a different part of our brain, and it has to do with movement, and we're moving our hands. And so drawing to me was important for all those reasons. And, you know, the opening of the book is Make Me a Muscle. And I drew that sort of quintessential, like, Popeye arm pose. And that made sense to open the book with that. But in the end of the book, it also made sense eventually to draw the glute, because it's the butt end. In the endurance section of the book, which is the last section of the book, there's a lot about how the gluteus maximus really is something that is fundamentally human and sort of aided in our evolution. And despite the fact that we're sitting on them more than ever these days, no other animal on Earth has such a large gluteal muscle. And it really contributed to our success on this planet. And so it just seemed like the right thing to do. Put that butt back there.
I mean, it made me want to get out there, I will say. And you know, if this isn't an exercise book per se, I mean, it really is about the study of muscles. And one of the ideas that I loved was you quoted a Stanford psychologist, Kelly McGonigal, and she wrote that we have a pharmacy in our muscles, to paraphrase. And I wanted you to unpack that for our listeners.
I love the way she puts that, the pharmacy in our muscles, because one of the things I found out that I did not know before was that muscle is an endocrine tissue, which means it's not just the stuff that is moving our skeleton around, but when the muscles move, they are sending molecular messengers all around our body. So it's like this wash of chemicals that, you know, once we start moving, you know, if you and I were to get up after our conversation and go take a walk, like from the first couple of minutes that we're exercising, our muscles are then talking to all these parts of our bodies, including our brains. And so they change us for good. They're regulating all kinds of physiological and metabolic processes throughout our body. And no kidding, they are actually making our brains bigger and stronger too. Like, they, in the hippocampus, exercise is known to stimulate formation of new neurons and synaptic plasticity in places where there's learning and memory. So bulking up our muscles bulks up our brain. I mean, simple as that. And it's really cool to unpack some of the science behind these sayings that we have. Like, we know that PE is really good for kids, and kids do better in school when they have it. And a lot of it is about getting physical activity to settle your brain and body. And to your point about the pharmacy in your muscles, it's mood regulation too. So our muscles are constantly doing things when we're moving to regulate cognition and mood and our emotional states. And so when we get that, you know, endocannabinoid dopamine rush, yes, and we feel so good when we're moving, it's because, like, these are all self-reinforcing activities that are just so beneficial for our health. And, you know, researchers are now very vocal about how muscle mass and maintaining muscle mass and working on strength training and all that as you get older is so important for our cognitive function, our brain, maintaining our neurological function as we age.
Well, a lot of ink has been spilled on the way that women have dieted or exercised to conform their muscles to a particular vision.
Right, and get smaller.
Smaller and lithe and thin versus being ripped and packed like we expect men to be. But one of the things you spend some time talking about is the way that men and boys suffer under the body image issues that I don't think gets as much attention. And just share a little bit about what concerns that you've seen, what issues you've seen raised, as I think a lot of young men with their protein powders and working out all the time are obsessional about their muscles.
Yeah, you make a really great point about how women and girls have had a specific kind of body image imposed upon them forever, really. Mm. And these kinds of body ideals can be very harmful to boys and men. And there's been this kind of quiet increase that's getting louder of eating disorders and body dysmorphia for men and boys because of the messaging around strength. And if you think about it, this messaging for women starts so young, really from the first toys that you get as a kid, like what a Barbie looks like.
Yeah, exactly.
But also Marvel superheroes. Your five-year-old boy is getting this toy that has a six-pack. This is another example of how that can sort of reinforce these sometimes harmful body stereotypes that this is the ideal and they're really impossible to achieve. I mean, very few people look like that. And they work so hard to get there. I think one of the things that really hit home for me was I saw this like Harvard Medical School publication. The headline was, "Your five-year-old boy should not be thinking about a six-pack." You know, and the fact that that is even out there. I mean, think about comic books, think about superheroes, mm-hmm. think about just magazines similar to.
Yes.
For girls. And so there's been a lot more conversation around that with health professionals, with doctors, researchers paying attention to this. Because when we kind of start to unpack these messages, it's really clear that they start from very, very, very young, have a long, long history. Even our medical textbooks sort of have this like unconscious bias of looking at the way muscle or the body is portrayed in a textbook. And that you're kind of like, oh, this is the norm. This is what I should be looking for. This is normal. And oftentimes in the past, it has been this white, mostly male. And one of the UCSF anatomists I talked to, she said, you know, this is the leg of a Michelangelo marble. Like not a lot of people look like that. And so just being aware of where all of these ideas are coming from is really helpful to be like, oh, this is not necessarily what I need to be looking like. This doesn't have to do with my health, but these messages start really early and are everywhere.
Well, I mean, this book is as much about muscles as it is about your father. And when you were young, your father took you and your brother, gave you the same exercises, the same challenges, and it was about showing strength and endurance. Those early messages that you could be physically powerful, did those have long-lasting impacts for you?
Oh, for sure. I think that while I'm very aware of this cultural landscape, you know, that we exist in, I was largely inoculated to a lot of it because of my upbringing, I think, and because of my early life in sports on the swim team. You know, I was comfortable in a swimsuit. I so remember going to pool parties in middle school and all of my female friends would be wearing big t-shirts swimming around in the pool. And it wasn't because they were afraid of getting tan. They just didn't want to show their bodies. Boys didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, this is so interesting because I was used to my body not being just something to be looked at,
right.
That it worked, that the reason I was wearing a swimsuit was so I could swim and I could swim fast, mm-hmm. not to be looked mm-hmm. at. And so having that counterpoint for kids of all ages and genders is so important because you learn at least on some level that your body works on the playing field for a reason, right? That there's a certain function. You're running around, you're doing all your swimming or you're rowing or you're dancing or whatever. And obviously there are all kinds of other, you know, cultural norms within a discipline about what your body should look like, or again, like this is pervasive, but at least on some level, you are aware that your body works.
Well, your father had a quote-unquote muscle academy with you and your brother, and you have started a little muscle academy with your son. What are you guys doing together, and how are you hanging out?
Oh, my gosh. I will tell you, when the pandemic was going on, we had a lot of pandemic PE in the house, and so we would do a little bit of schoolwork, and then when people started getting crazy, we would start making them do burpees and run around the block, and I would say the burpees have stuck around. I'm proud to say that my children do a pretty mean burpee.
I mean, I'm impressed. I'm a little scared to go to your house.
You don't make everyone who comes over do a burpee, but you can if you want.
I think I will try. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Bonnie's new book is On Muscle, The Stuff That Moves Us and Why It Matters. It's available in bookstores now. And thank you so much for joining us. Such a pleasure to speak with you, Bonnie.
Always a joy. Grace, thank you.